answering it down some questions and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan?
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB, the English Radio Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I'm Ata, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have a special guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Agha Muhammadi. Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
So for today's discussion, we want to talk about how to remove our grief and problems according to Islamic beliefs. In fact, how to reach a kind of tranquility, ease of heart, it's better to say an ease of soul. Is there any recommendation in Islam, a special supplication to be read out to reach such a tranquility and calmness of heart or not?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi al-Tahirin. This is one of the very fundamental questions in human's life, and actually this is one of the goals of life.
Yes.
It means that what is the ultimate goal that people are looking for in their life? Some people, some philosophers, some psychologists, they say that it's to get happiness. And again, there are some differences on the issue of happiness. Or at least is to get rid of the pains and to reach to a kind of a relief in the life.
Yes.
So this is the whole story of life.
Mm-hmm.
So if those who are believers like us, we believe that the happiness should be for this material life and also to get it in another realm of life, that we will have it in the journey of life. Those who have a secular and materialistic view, they say that no, the life is limited to this material life, and we just have to get the happiness and relief in this life. But anyhow, both groups agree that we are looking for happiness in the life, mm-hmm. and we are looking for a kind of tranquility or yes. peace of mind.
Yes.
This is the aim of life.
Mm-hmm. It does not depend on which school of thought you are believing, as you said, all the people around the world.
Nobody is looking
for pain. Nobody is looking for example, difficulties or problems.
Yeah. Of course, people have different understanding of this, of happiness. They define it in different ways according to what they find happiness in.
Yes.
So somebody may find it in a luxurious car. Somebody may find it in being famous. Somebody's power. For somebody's money. For somebody's food.
Mm-hmm.
It differs. But anyhow, these are acts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you are playing soccer and you are a famous soccer player, playing soccer is an act. Act is not the ultimate goal.
Yes.
So what is the purpose behind this act?
Mm-hmm.
So they may say that I want to be famous. I want to do show my skills. Mm-hmm. I want to be beloved. So you see, there is a state of mind that is there behind whatever act that we do. And here, what matters, there are several elements that matter, and one of them is the anthropology that we have.
Yes.
So you see that there are two aspects of epistemological and psychological background or aspect or dimension to this point. I mean, how we can get happiness. So without having a proper anthropology, without having a proper cosmology, without having a proper epistemology, we cannot get the benefit out of the acts and the rituals in religion.
Yes.
Lots of people have problem in these areas. They come to recite dhikr, they come to recite Quran, and at the end they say that it's not giving us the happiness, the relief
the
of mind that we are looking for. Why? Because you have problems somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
First, you have to solve that problem. So ma'rifah and epistemological side is very important.
Yes.
That's why you see that in hadiths, we have several hadiths
mm-hmm.
saying that to think for a second, for a minute, for a moment is better than worshiping for 76 years.
Yes.
Why? Because 70-60 years of worship, just doing some rituals without knowing what you are doing, is not going to give you that relief of mind. Mm-hmm. But if you solve one philosophical question or problem in your mind, then it changed the life and your approach to life dramatically.
Of course, the public people, you know, especially in the modern world, since so many people are busy with different things in comparison to the past, we could say that in the past, not only believers, but even in the Western countries, the people had this peace of mind and relief more than nowadays, you know. In this industrialized world with all these movements, you know, coming here, going there, being busy around the clock, okay? So the pains of heart and mind are more than before. Now, the question is that, can religion, especially Islam, and the teaching of Islam help us to dedicate a specific time during the day, in 24 hours we have, to our relief of mind and soul or not?
Yeah, this is very important aspect of life that we always, and people always ignore it. Mm-hmm. And I said anthropology, it is because, you know, we may find our happiness in working long hours, getting more money, and having the different facilities, and being busy. The modern life is very quick.
Yes.
And the distractions, the mind occupations are so much. In the past, people had few needs, just somewhere, something to wear, something to eat, a shelter. And almost that was all. So people had lots of free time. Mm-hmm. But now life is very busy, and this is the nature of the modern life.
That's right.
And in this very quick, busy life, people lose something, and that is themselves, their soul. And so if a person has a wisdom of life, then they will find that to get the happiness, you need to also, beside whatever you are achieving from the material objects around you, to find that there is something as you, as self, yourself, and you have to, and also that needs to be flourished, nourished, and it should be taken care of.
Yes.
And that's why I said anthropology is very important here.
IRIB English Radio presents Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Around the world nowadays, there are so many, we can say, psychological, for example, trends or manners in order to get that relief. Some people claim, for example, yoga, some people, for example, sports, some people even dancing and music in order to find such a relief, which are not absolutely, we can say, proved by the religion of Islam. In fact, in order to get rid of those pains, you are not at the same time allowed to get into any other way, isn't it? Because the law of Sharia is over there to be observed, and when Sharia is over there, there are its own specific recommendations for you how to reach such peace of mind.
Yeah, actually, this as I don't want to get into Sharia right now.
Okay.
So my discussion is very general. So I don't want to limit the discussion just to Islam, because lots of audience might not be Muslim, and I hope that our words are reaching non-Muslims as well, because this is now, this is the nature of the modern life. One of the positive sides is that if you have anything to serve humanity, it will be seen, it will be received. And so I'm just not looking from the Islamic perspective at the issue. Of course, I will come back to the Islamic side of that.
Yes.
So what matters is that we as humans, this is the common point with all humanity, with all human beings, that whatever I said up to now. So to have a proper anthropology, how do you define man?
Mm-hmm.
What is the definition of man? Because of that definition, then you will explain, you will define, you will set up the aims, the goals, and happiness. So as much as you have a perfect in depth concept of human being, then you will have stronger happiness.
Yes.
This is not according to Islam or whatever religion.
Okay.
This is human being.
Yes.
As to the extent that the pleasures you have in the life are not material.
Mm-hmm.
The state and the level of the pleasure will be stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Material life is limited. Material pleasures are limited. Imagine if we see, if an example, if the greatest material pleasures in the world is in a specific food.
Yes.
And you have paid a lot to get that food. Imagine that eating mm-hmm. that food or this medicine or whatever this gives you the greatest amount of pleasure according to the materialistic understanding, the chemicals that it creates in the body and whatever. So the moment that you prepare to eat the food,
yes,
then you receive a bad news. Your father passed away, your mother passed away, your son had an accident. Now there is a kind of disorder in the mind. Your mental state is hurt, is damaged.
Yes.
And now if you want to eat the food, there will be no pleasure.
There is no help to you.
It's not going to help.
Yes.
Why? Because there is some mental problem. That's why those people who make themselves happy with alcohol, dancing and
yes.
with this modern kind of amusement. You
yes.
see, when they are in serious challenges in their life,
mm-hmm.
then they appeal to alcohol, they appeal to drugs.
Yes.
So they go into those rank materials just to get relief of mind. And the relief of mind in that explanation means that to lose the awareness of mind.
Mm-hmm.
So you are not in the state of proper thinking.
So, sorry, Sheikh, there must be a differentiation now that when we are talking about the problems, are we talking about the mind? I mean, what's happening in the brain or your soul?
Mm.
Because those people, as you said, who get to drugs or alcohol or something like that, used to be non-believers maybe, or at least they are thinking about the psychological problems. That's why psychology in the Western terminology got to the scene and proposes some solutions to the problem. So I think when we take a look from the religious perspective, then there comes the concept of soul, which might be very much different from the mind, isn't it?
Yeah. No, as I said, my discussion was a little bit general to say that what are the reality and
yes.
what is the reality and what are the realistic things on the ground that
yes.
people, this is how people live.
Yes.
And of course, in the secular understanding, you have psycho and man.
Yes.
Man has some mental reactions to
yes.
specific, you know, factors.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't believe in soul, so they don't study soul.
Yes.
But of course, we believe that there is a soul, and they just look at the reactions.
Mm-hmm.
There is no essence as soul, but we
okay.
believe that soul exists. But anyhow, I'm saying that people may find pleasures or relief in music and these things.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, when there are serious challenges, you see that it doesn't help.
Yes.
And it doesn't give that kind of real tranquility, that
yes.
real peace of mind. that you can find it in the true believers.
Yes.
So here I said the ma'rifah, the knowledge is very important.
Yes.
And this knowledge is not just reading. Mm-hmm. This I'm not talking about just reading books.
Yes.
Lots of people are reading books, teaching books, delivering lectures, yes. but they might have some serious problems in their personal life. Mm-hmm. We have seen these people. Yes. And so to know something is different from having ma'rifah. Ma'rifah in Islamic terminology is a kind of knowledge which comes with a kind of tasting it. So yes. that the matter of tasting is yes. very important.
Okay.
So there's a difference between knowing something and tasting something.
That's right.
You know, I remember when I was young, I used to deliver lectures from very, very young age. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I happened to deliver lectures on the rights of parents, the rights of father, and the state of being father. But the moment you become father yourself, then you yes. see that it's totally different. Now you taste it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a difference between knowing something and tasting
That's
something.
Right. Okay.
So this is ma'rifah.
Yes.
Then you can say that when you're talking about being a father, you know what exactly it is, mm-hmm. means that you have tasted it. With your heart.
Yes.
And when I'm talking about ma'rifah and epistemology, the kind of knowledge that you have in your heart, something that is very well established and you believe in it,
yes.
that can help you. I mean, now I'm talking about the need to the epistemology and what kind of epistemology and what kind of anthropology we need here. We can talk about it. And
okay.
Yeah, I can say that what kind of okay. definition of human
yes.
can give
yes.
what level
okay.
of happiness.
That's there. Right. Okay, inshallah, we have to continue our discussion upcoming episode of the program. Now we are done for this episode. Thank you very much, Sheikh Al-Mahmadi. It was really nice of you. You know, we will continue our discussion, get into more practical guidelines according to, as you said, this epistemology, as you're talking about, I think what kind of epistemology are we after, and are there any practical recommendations for or not? It was very kind of you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. The another episode. God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban li aliyin wa husayni wa hasan li aliyin wa husayni wa hasan inna fil jannati nahran min laban إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The journalists have found themselves stalked by the indiscriminate Israeli strikes, which so far have claimed the lives of over 100 journalists working for different media agencies across the globe. Journalists believe the regime is deliberately attacking them and that they are paying the price of covering the Israeli massacres and atrocities committed day and night in Gaza and putting on display the really brutal face of the Israeli occupation. This undoubtedly has limited the chance of the Israeli propaganda machine to whitewash the murder of Palestinian children and deceive people outside the occupied territories on what is really going on.
The Israeli occupation is still practicing this genocide against the Palestinian people generally and the journalists particularly. Till this moment, the Israeli army has deliberately killed 105 journalists who were doing their job of covering the Israeli crimes. And the reason behind that is to curb the coverage of Israeli crimes. In addition to that, it destroyed 96 media agencies in Gaza.
The sufferings of the Palestinian journalists in Gaza are not limited to the Israeli attacks. They are also grappling with the disastrous humanitarian conditions they are experiencing along with their families. Many of them lost their houses to constant Israeli bombardments and joined the displaced people in Gaza, who are estimated to comprise over 80% of the region's population. All they have now are small tents created of pieces of plastic, wood, and fabric, or at best, classes in the UNRWA schools, which are supposed to be safe, but have been repeatedly targeted by Israel.
We, the Palestinian journalists, consider ourselves standing on the same front beside the resistance members on the battlefield. Our battle is to show the world the reality of Israeli massacres despite the ongoing crimes against journalists and the catastrophic humanitarian conditions in Gaza. As you see, I live here in this press van. It's really hard to fulfill your basic needs even when it comes to going to the bathroom. My family fled to the schools and they faced the same hardships.
Journalists in Gaza have to deal with many problems when trying to prepare a simple report on the situation in the Strip. Many cannot even find a chair or a desk, and hence they cannot perform journalistic tasks smoothly. Making matters worse, most of the time there is no internet in the Strip, and journalists cannot communicate with the world.
As a Palestinian journalist, similar to all my colleagues, we live in a very complicated situation. Even though we are chased by the Israeli strikes and killings, we find ourselves obliged to forget about the difficulties we face in every aspect of life due to this onslaught for the sake of reporting the truth. I assure you that every single one of the 2.3 million Palestinians here has his or her tragedy, and this includes us. Our daily life is horrific and unimaginable at all levels.
Like all the other Gazans, many Palestinian journalists in the besieged district have been killed brutally by the Israeli bombardments. And those who are still alive continue to suffer from the unlivable conditions in the region. Mutab Msabih, the central area of Gaza Strip.
Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has slammed Israel's assassination of senior Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps advisor Sayed Radi Mousawi in Syria. Hezbollah called it a flagrant and brazen attack and a transgression of borders. Deputy head of Hezbollah's executive council told Press TV that General Qasem Soleimani had predicted that Sayed Radi would be assassinated in the battle to liberate al-Quds.
His martyrdom was only a matter of time. He was a man who had spent his youth on sacrifice. He was always ready to offer whatever assistance was needed to the resistance groups. This assassination will not stop the path which Sayed Radi al-Mousawi has opened for us. It will not stop us and other resistance groups in the region from continuing to walk in this path. We will remain on the battlefield to face this enemy which is occupying and looting our land. And with the blessing of the martyrs, the future will witness a new victory for the resistance in Gaza and the region.
Palestinian resistance factions Hamas and Islamic Jihad also said in a statement that the assassination of Brigadier General Radi Mousawi on Syrian territory is a crime and a cowardly act that threatens security and stability in the region. The Palestinian resistance groups lauded Sayed Radi for his role in supporting the resistance in Palestine.
We know that he was very close to General Qasem Soleimani and therefore worked closely with the Palestinian resistance groups and all resistance groups in the region. His efforts were based on the same school of thought as General Soleimani, and he walked in the same path which they had opened together. Today, we can see the result of these efforts in Gaza and the West Bank.
The Iranian cultural advisor in Beirut said General Mousawi was considered as a man who devoted his life to the Palestinian cause and finally sacrificed it for the sake of Al-Quds.
Sayyid Radhi Mousavi, God bless his soul, was one of the great leaders in the IRGC who devoted his life to support the honorable resistance in the region, especially in Lebanon and Palestine. Therefore, he is a part of every blessed bullet or rocket that is being fired to target the criminal Zionist regime, whether in Palestine or Lebanon.
Sayyid Radhi is now seen as a regional leader and martyr, just as General Soleimani. He is regarded by many as a martyr in the long battle for the liberation of Al-Quds. On the martyrdom anniversary of General Qasem Soleimani, the resistance front has bid farewell to another leader. Sayyid Radhi Mousavi's role in supporting the resistance groups of Lebanon and Palestine was significant. However, for the resistance, martyrdom is another form of divine victory. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has vowed to take tough revenge on Israel for assassinating a senior Iranian military advisor in Syria. IRGC spokesman Ramazan Sharif made this statement during a press conference held in the Iranian capital, Tehran. He blasted the Monday Israeli missile attack on Damascus that targeted Brigadier General Sayyid Razi Mousavi's residence in the Sayyid Zainab neighborhood. He also described the assassination as a continuation of Israel's violation of international laws, calling on the international community to stop the crimes of the occupying regime, which endanger international peace and security. When asked about Tel Aviv's motive for committing this heinous crime, Sharif said the regime is seeking to expand its genocidal onslaught on Gaza to the entire West Asia region.
One of the reasons is that the Israeli regime wants to extend the scope of the war beyond the borders of Palestine, and they want to deflect public attention from the Gaza war. The second point, which is important, is that the Israelis try to show off their aerial dominance. Maybe these are the two main reasons because of which the assassination was committed.
The IRGC spokesman warned that Israel must wait for a direct or indirect response as Iran reserves the right to counter the Israeli assassination. He added, the martyrdom of the Iranian commander will usher in a new era where the Zionist regime will be the loser. Sharif also touched upon the U.S. support for Israel, saying Washington is violating international law by funding and backing the regime's crimes in Gaza.
Definitely, one of their strategies has been to change the Israel-Palestine conflict to Iran-America conflict. But as the wise leader of the Islamic Revolution said on the first day of the Al-Aqsa flood operation, this operation was launched by Palestinians against Israelis, and the U.S. support for Israel is the reason why the regime continues to exist.
Brigadier General Sayyid Razi Mousavi was martyred by Israel while on an advisory mission in Syria.
Truth never dies, and today it's livelier than ever as the world is observing the Israeli crimes with open eyes, conscious minds, and bleeding hearts. No matter what the Israeli regime and its supporters do to divert the global community's attention from its aggression on Gaza, the whole world are unanimously calling for justice for Palestinians. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
Syrian military, religious parliamentary and popular delegations, along with resistance representatives, visited the Iranian embassy in Damascus to convey their condolences for the martyrdom of Brigadier General Sayyid Razi Mousavi, the top commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. The attendees condemned the heinous crime committed by the Israeli regime and expressed unwavering faith in the victory of the resistance.
This is a criminal act and an evidence of bankruptcy. When they failed in confronting the resistance, they resorted to assassinations. It is well known that their agenda is to target resistance leaders in Gaza, but they have failed so far. They have been unable to achieve any meaningful results except for killing innocent civilians.
I express my condolences and congratulations on behalf of the Syrian president for the martyrdom of Sayyid Razi. The price of victory and resistance are these martyrs who join thousands of martyrs of the Syrian army and all resistance forces in Lebanon and Iraq. This is the fruit of the struggle and real work to restore our usurped rights.
In a heartfelt tribute, participants spoke highly of Commander Mousavi and his significant role as an official of logistical support for the resistance front, while resistance leaders confirmed that his blood will not be in vain. Rather, it will inspire the peoples of the region to resist more than ever until the Israeli regime is fully defeated, along with its United States supporter.
As for us, the Islamic resistance in Iraq, by the permission of God, we will have a response. Our military operations in support of Gaza are ongoing. The assassination of the martyr commander Razi Mousavi aimed to cut off the supply chains and hinder the great achievements made by the Axis of Resistance in supporting Gaza.
One of the pillars of the Axis of Resistance, who dedicated his life to serving people and defending their rights. He left a great impact on the souls of those who knew him. Participants remembered him as a generous, humble, and kind-hearted man. With profound grief and resolute determination to seek justice, they expressed their unwavering confidence that Iran will retaliate against the Israeli vicious crime. Syrians and Iranians share the same grief today, along with all fighters of the resistance front, as martyr Sayed Reza Mousavi was not only a military advisor who defended Syria, but also an icon of humanity and heroism. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
With Christmas celebrations in Al-Quds and Bethlehem cancelled, the Christian Palestinians residing in Lebanon also have no reason to be joyous. Mass Christmas services have transformed into prayers of mourning. Nahida and Samar Antoun were killed by Israeli sniper fire in Gaza. They were killed as they took refuge in a monastery.
They were killed by Israeli sniper fire, and what we heard from the Pope is not true. It was not by mistake. No one is killed in Gaza by mistake. This is a Zionist policy, and they purposely kill everyone, especially the children and every Arab, no matter what their religion, because we are a thorn in their throat. But we will remain, and they will leave.
They started shelling the churches just like they shelled the mosques. We were first confident that when they go to the church, they will be safe. But sniper fire hit them in the heart of the church. So there is no safe haven in Gaza. We are not celebrating this year just like Al-Quds. We are mourning all of Palestine's martyrs, not only our relatives.
Palestinian Christians in Lebanon stress that the Israeli regime does not differentiate between Muslims or Christians, since they are all with the resistance.
We salute the resistance in Gaza, Lebanon, Yemen, Iraq, and Syria, and we tell them not to stop. These racist Zionists are even worse than the Nazis. What they are doing is more heinous than what the Nazis did. If the Arabs want to forsake Al-Quds, fine. We are the ones who will liberate it with the efforts of our heroic resistance inside Palestine, and victory is very near.
Despite the sadness in the hearts of the grown-ups, they are attempting to put a smile on the faces of the children who also remember Gaza.
We're giving these gifts to the children of this camp, since it's not their crime that the Zionist occupation is killing children in Palestine. We want to give them some joy, as we have been doing for the last 5 years.
We do not feel there is a holiday, but we're trying to put some happiness in the hearts of children here while we remember that our children in Palestine are being killed every day. The Israelis do not differentiate between Muslim and Christian. It's a monster that was planted on our land, and it kills all people alike.
With tens of thousands already killed by the Israeli regime in Palestine, people at churches in Lebanon remember the oppressed people of Palestine and pray, may Christ be with them. For Palestinian Christians in Lebanon, this Christmas is an occasion to mourn rather than celebrate. As they remember their kin who were martyred in Gaza, their biggest wish of the year is that they may one day celebrate Christmas in their churches as they come back home to a free Palestine. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The Iranian Defense Ministry spokesman has warned that Israel will have to pay the price for assassinating Iran's senior military advisor in Syria, General Sayed Razi Mousavi. Brigadier General Reza Talaynik noted the revenge against Israel will be fulfilled at the proper time and place,
Speaking at the press conference on Tuesday, the spokesman said the Zionist regime's move to assassinate Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, Brigadier General Mousavi in Damascus, reveals the terrorist nature of Israel. He added that the murder is a clear violation of Syria's sovereignty.
This crime definitely deserves punishment. The Israelis must pay the price for their recent terrorist actions. Iran will give a smart and a strong response to the Israeli strike at the appropriate time and place, and in such a way that the Zionist regime's purposes in carrying out these attacks won't be fulfilled.
Brigadier General Sayed Razi Mousavi was assassinated in a missile strike on a neighborhood in Damascus. He was in charge of the resistance front's logistics in Syria. Mousavi was also comrade of IRGC's late commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated in a U.S. drone attack near Baghdad International Airport in 2020. The IRGC strongly condemned Mousavi's assassination, saying the occupying Israeli regime will pay for this crime.
The developments in the past 4 years following the assassination of General Soleimani show that our enemies, especially the United States, have obtained opposite results from such acts of terrorism. Over the past 4 years, the ideals and patterns of resistance grew in the region and even in the world. Contrary to the terrorist goal of the United States, the resistance front has gained more power than before. The most important issue in the region and the world is still the genocide in Gaza, and the failure and defeat of the Zionists has been revealed to the world, and the regime is going through a dark period.
Experts believe Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps is revered in West Asia for its key role in helping the Iraqi and Syrian armies eliminate the Daesh terror group. And now Israel has once again demonstrated its hostility toward the IRGC and its counter-terrorism campaign by assassinating one of its senior military advisors in Syria. Iranian officials believe that the recent Israeli crimes in the region, such as the Gaza War or the assassination of the Iranian commander in Syria, shows the continued weakness and failure of the Tel Aviv regime, which leads Israel to collapse and complete destruction. Saman Kujur, Tehran.
On October 7th, the Israeli regime launched brutal bombardment of the Gaza Strip, killing and maiming tens of thousands of innocent civilians. Palestinian journalists and media workers were no exception. The Israeli regime has so far killed more than 100 Palestinian journalists as well as dozens of their family members. According to Reporters Without Borders, Palestinian journalists have no safe refuge and no way of leaving the blockaded territory.
Every day, Zionist forces target journalists in Gaza, and if they cannot kill them, they kill their family members. The Zionist regime has killed scores of our colleagues along with their families. Tel Aviv wants to silence us and prevent us from exposing Israeli war crimes.
Over the course of the Israeli onslaught, dozens of Gaza journalists have also been reported missing, detained, or injured. Israeli forces have also targeted their media offices and homes.
My message to the international community is that we here, as a journalist, we didn't feel that we are safe. We are targeted, and every time we can be bombed with the Israeli occupation forces. So my message is that we have to be saved. We are doing our work. We are only covering the acts that Israeli made here in the Gaza Strip. So we are trying to get this message to the world.
Experts have dubbed the Israeli aggression since October 7th as the deadliest period for journalists covering military conflicts in more than 3 decades.
We were displaced from the Tel al-Hawa neighborhood in Gaza City to the house of our friend, the journalist Adel Zorob, in Rafah. He hosted us for 70 days, and a few days ago, my family was sleeping in the room close to his room, and an Israeli airstrike killed him along with several members of his family and my family.
Reporters Without Borders has described the Gaza Strip as the graveyard of journalists.
Journalists in Gaza have been at the forefront of the campaign to expose Israeli crimes against innocent civilians. Experts say Palestinian journalists are paying the price for the international apathy toward Israeli war crimes. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
A soldier who fights for his country. On the fourth anniversary of the martyrdom of the top IRGC general, Qasem Soleimani, we broadcast a three-part series to introduce this well-known Iranian general to a wider public. In this program, the first of this three-part series, we look at Qasem Soleimani's childhood and upbringing. Please stay with us. His family was not rich and well-off, and he came from a modest background. But nonetheless, Britain's Guardian newspaper refers to him as Iran's sword in the West and the most cunning and astute military general in West Asia. According to the Guardian, he's a man of few words, but he has the ability to scupper and ruin every US plan and operation in the West Asia region. Mainstream Western media referred to him as a shadowy commander, but in his last will and testament, Qasem Soleimani insisted that simple inscription, Iran's soldier Qasem Soleimani, on his tombstone was all that he wanted. How an impoverished child and simple construction labourer rose to become the most influential military commander in the West Asia region and the second most powerful man within the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC, is the subject of this programme. Many are keen to learn more about this top charismatic Iranian general, whose legendary courage and perspicacity helped him rise quickly in military rank, eventually becoming the most influential military and political figure in the West Asia region. His courage, often striking fear in the enemy, has its roots in his childhood upbringing. Qasem Soleimani was born on 21st of March 1956 in the village of Qanat Malek, close to the town of Rabur in Kerman province in southeastern Iran. He was born into a poor but religious family and had a religious upbringing. In his memoirs, he gives an account of his childhood, personal life and experiences. He recounts, "I loved the arrival of the spring season. Winter months were particularly austere. All I had to wear was a synthetic nylon shirt, which we called wash and wear. And throughout winter months, I used to wear this shirt with nothing over or under it. Winter months were very cold and we always had plenty of snowfall. At night, it was so cold that very often I was forced to wrap my mother's chador, a large cloth worn as a combination head covering, veil and shawl, around me. My mother used to wrap her headscarf securely around my head so that, in her own words, freezing air does not enter my ears. Our clothes were inadequate for the winter months, and we often spent the night shivering in the cold, and you could even hear my teeth chattering." My mother used to give me some dried food, such as cooked dried turnips, which were as hard as stone. Eating those dried turnips used to take half a day. My childhood years were tough, particularly the winter months. My sister, my brothers and I used to eat baked potatoes during winter. I remember my father buying a knee-high Wellington boot to cope with all the snow, but this was of little use since snow was up to our chest. The rubber Wellington boots made little difference in such heavy snowfall. I also remember the heater in our classroom at school. We all used to huddle around the heater, absorbing as much heat as we could in the freezing weather. At home too, the heat from my mother's cooking stove used to attract all the children around the stove. My father was very religious. He used to pray 5 times a day. He used to pray as soon as the muazzin summoned the faithful to prayer from the minaret of the local mosque. In those days, relatively few people prayed 5 times a day, but my father was a strict observer of prayers. His knowledge of stars and astronomy told him when to pray at dawn. His noon or midday prayer was judged from the length of shadows on the ground. He also believed in halal and haram, meaning everything that is allowed or in compliance with Islamic law, and everything that is unacceptable or illegal under Islamic law, respectively. Thus, I am proud to say that throughout my father's life, not a single haram item, which means illegal under Islamic law, entered into our household, and that is quite remarkable. General Soleimani recounts in his memoirs that his father owned a rather fierce and ill-tempered bull, which everybody tried to avoid, fearing his rather sharp horns. But in his memoirs he says, "One day, when I was 10 years old, during the summer months and school holidays, I mounted this fierce beast, this ill-tempered bull, and travelled a full 15 kilometres, about 9 miles, to a neighbouring village, where my paternal aunt used to live. The difficult-to-control and stubborn bull repeatedly hit my legs with his head during the 9-mile journey through the desert, but nonetheless, I arrived in good health and uninjured at my auntie's house, proud of my achievement as a 10-year-old child. Thus, even as a child, Qasem Soleimani was fearless and courageous to an amazing degree." As a small child, Qasem Soleimani contracted rubella, but he managed to survive this illness. He had a nomadic childhood, with his family moving and relocating every 6 months as winter and summer approached. Qasem Soleimani finished his years of primary schooling in his home village of Qanat Malek, but when, as a child, he used to help out his father on the family farm. Family was very important to Qasem. At the age of 13, the young Qasem travelled to the nearby city of Kerman to help his family pay off an agricultural debt. His father owed this debt to a local bank. Worried that his father might go to jail if he was unable to pay his bank loan, Qasem sought work in the city of Kerman. His small stature meant that many employers were unwilling to offer him any work, but eventually he became a simple construction labourer on a building site. After some time working as a construction worker, he managed to find work in a hotel and saved all his wages for 5 months, which amounted to 1,000 tumans, or 10,000 rials, sending his entire earnings to his father to pay off his bank loan. Qassem's first trip to the city of Kerman lasted 9 months. During his second trip to Kerman, he started lifting weights in his spare time and attended a traditional Iranian gymnasium known as Zurkhane and started bodybuilding. In 1976, just 2 years before the Islamic Revolution, with the encouragement of his friend Ahmad, he started to regularly attend the Qa'im Mosque in the city of Kerman, a local mosque where Quranic classes were taught by Mr. Haqiqi. These Quranic classes had a profound effect on the young Qasem Soleimani. He later moved on to a job at the City of Kerman Water Board and got into lifting weights in his spare time. With the victory of the Islamic Revolution in February of 1979, he joined a unit of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC, and received his formal military training. Just after the Islamic Revolution, he became acquainted with a cleric from the city of Mashhad named Reza Kamyab, who spurred him to revolutionary activities. Even though the cleric Reza Kamyab was martyred by MKO terrorists in 1981, and Qasem Soleimani's friendship with Kamyab only lasted for just 2 years, nonetheless, Kamyab's revolutionary sermons kindled the spirit of the Islamic Revolution within the young Qasem, and it also led to another friendship with another cleric from the same city of Mashhad, whose name was Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Qasem Soleimani's brother, Sohrab Soleimani, commented on his teenage years in Kerman by saying, "My brother Qasem wanted to help out with the family's financial difficulties, and so, as a 13-year-old teenager, he went to Kerman to find work. He loved his parents so much that as soon as he got the opportunity, he visited the family home in Qanat Malek village and kissed the faces of both his mum and dad, and was very respectful towards them. He genuinely believed that the Almighty had given him the opportunity to serve Islam and Muslims and the downtrodden in this world precisely because of the love, religious beliefs and prayers of his parents. Through intellect, courage, perspicacity and an absolute faith in Islam, Qasem Soleimani rose to become the second most powerful man within the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC, the top commander of Iran's elite Quds Force, and one of the most powerful military and political figures within the West Asia region. The vicissitudes of Qasem Soleimani's life are well worth studying, and he is truly a role model for young Muslims and freedom-seeking peoples of the world everywhere.
چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illa Allah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
This is a short part of Imam Khomeini's speech. Duty of the theological schools in training of judges. Think of the future and build great pious judges as well as think of the present when we are facing problems. Should we want to delay justice, which is in principle attaining to the problems of the people? Well, a group must take charge of this affair and can even do the job based on emulation, and this is a duty on all of us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Dear audience, welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. Well, on the subject of the status and esteem for women in Islam, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh said, "We want women to attain the high rank of true humanity. Women must have a share in determining their destiny." Here, Imam Rahmatullah Alayhi is talking about the real worth of women, which has been denied throughout the history. Islam, 14 centuries ago, made women equally accountable to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in glorifying and worshipping Him, setting no limits on her moral progress. Also, Islam established the woman's equality in her humanity with men. In the Holy Book of Quran, in the first verse of Surah An-Nisa, the glorious Allah says, "A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. O mankind, be wary of your Lord who created you from a single soul and created its mate from it, and from the two of them scattered numerous men and women. Be wary of Allah in whose name you adjure one another and the wombs. Indeed, Allah is watchful over you." Since men and women both came from the same essence, they are equal in their humanity. Women cannot be by nature evil, as you know, some other religions do believe in that way. And similarly, neither gender can be superior because it would be a contradiction of equality. A right given to Muslim women by God 1,400 years ago is the right to vote. On any Islamic public matter, a woman may voice her opinion and participate in politics. One example is that the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam is told that when believing women come to him and swear their allegiance to Islam, he must accept their oath. This established the right of women to select their leader and publicly declare so. Finally, Islam does not forbid a woman from holding important positions in government, and that is exactly what our dear leader told us and demanded us to do. Okay, for now, let's just end this program because it seems that our time has come to its end. And for ending, let's just recite this sentence of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh. On the subject of the status and esteem for women in Islam, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh said, "We want women to attain the high rank of true humanity. Women must have a share in determining their destiny." Okay, that was it. And until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all.
As-salamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is